Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, radiant shadows. You know, it sounds like a paradox, but then so much of life on planet Earth is just that, isn't it? A paradox. So I love the idea of radiant shadows because there's the intimate connectedness there and integration. Because in my understanding, the light and the dark belong together, right? They're not separate. Because we have day and night. We have seen and seen. We have yin and yang, right? They just go together. And there's no problem with this as long as we see that they are parts of that integration. The darkness only becomes a problem if we are so immersed in it that we can't see that there's any light anymore, that it's just darkness. Then it becomes the problem when we are taught and the memory of mind and the media tell us it's all dark, it's all going to hell, you know, it's all a problem. Then that does become a difficulty in our lives. But when we see that it's really an interplay of dark and light, then we're fine. We're able to look clearly at the dark with the light of our consciousness. And in the same way, the light itself only becomes oppressive, right, if we refuse to acknowledge that there's that dark side. If we want to make everything lightness and sweet and beautiful all the time, and isn't it wonderful, you know? And we do this in Unity sometimes, don't we? We slap affirmations on everything. Oh, it's so pretty. It's so beautiful. Well, yeah, maybe, but it's also got a dark side to it. And it's got a messy part. It's called spiritual bypassing, right? When you want to get to the solution without having to go through all the difficulty and the sadness and the hurt and the pain to get there. You have to honor the process as well. That's the integration of light and dark. You know, most religions, actually artists, think about the artists that have understood the interplay of light and dark. Some of my favorite artists like Caravaggio, Velasquez, Rembrandt. They're brilliant, they're mystical, because they understand the play of shadow, of light and dark coming together, and usually on portraits of people. And you see into the soul of that person because of that interplay. Most religions understand it. You know, they understand that there's both and in the universe. Listen to my favorite psalm, actually, Psalm 139. And there's a couple of passages here I want to read. If I say, surely darkness will steal over me and the day around me be night. And we've all been there, you know, those places of grief and pain and difficulty. If I say, surely darkness will steal over me and the day around me be turned to night. Darkness is not dark for you, Lord. The night is as light as day. To you, both dark and light are one. Now, hold that concept, because that is very profound, right? Light and dark are one to God. There is no paradox in God. There is simply wholeness and integration. And it's very important to understand this, because it's the way we free ourselves of all limiting conditions, understanding that it's not an escape from the dark into the light. It's an embrace of both. It's a bit like that story, isn't it? We don't want to say go away to the boogie monster, because if you do, where'd it go? It just went deep inside of us. It didn't go anywhere. So to welcome it, to say come back, is to begin that integrative work, is to understand that it's there for a purpose, right? Everything that befalls us for a purpose. Hard to get our head around that sometimes, but eventually when we do, we understand, oh yes, there's illumination that comes from that integration. Tibetan Buddhism, you know, they have the peaceful deities and the wrathful deities. And the wrathful deities have got, you know, nasty expressions. They're carrying clubs and stuff like that. And they're protective deities, you know. And then you've got these peaceful deities that are just flowers and light, you know, the hippie deities, you know, on the one hand, wrathful on the other. But they're both aspects of the same divinity, right? Sometimes you need that force and aggression, yes, to defend, to protect. Sometimes you need that openness to welcome and embrace. Hinduism's great at this, you know, because they have the goddess, the idea of the feminine in its beneficent form, like Parvati or Saraswati or an Annapurna who gives food to everybody, you know, that superabundance, the givingness aspect of the feminine, of God as the feminine. And then you've got the goddesses like Kali and Durga, who are the opposite of that. You know, and Kali means dark, the dark one. And she's usually depicted with a necklace of skulls. And she's got a big red tongue because she's been eating so much blood. And out of her mouth, she's spewing dead bodies, you know. Whoa, what is this about? Well, what it's about is on a daily basis, we are dealing with life and death, aren't we? It's all around us all the time. These are the aspects of God, the aspects of divinity. And it's an integration of the two. It's saying they're not separate, right? I'm not going to try and deny that part of me that has to deal with the sadness and the grief and the pain and the change. I have to integrate it into my whole being. I have to honor it, actually. Honor those times of pain and difficulty. You know, in some ways, Christianity, some forms of Christianity, have unfortunately demonized the dark, yeah? And they've thrown it out, and they don't want to deal with it, and they've given it to someone called the devil, right? What a sadness this is, because half of our being is therefore demonized and cast out into the darkness, right? Whereas it could have been integrated. Last night, for instance, we had 400 revelers having a wonderful time. But then we had on the side two people with banners saying that we were going to hell. Yeah, and that they were rebuking us and that we had to repent and everything. And I was an ungodly minister because I was leading you all astray. It's celebrating Halloween. I'm sorry. Not only that, but they were filming the whole thing, which was kind of spooky because now they're going to show it in their church somewhere. I don't know. We started going into the homosexuals going to hell. And, of course, they always pick on the difficult ones like that, which has a few references in the Bible, maybe one or two, usually in Leviticus, right? But it also says in Leviticus that if you wear a blend, like cotton polyester or wool and cotton together, I have to stone you. I've got to stone you, okay? And I asked him, I said, are you wearing a blend right now? And then I asked, did you go to Red Lobster? Have you been to Red Lobster? I said, abomination! Says in the Bible, if you eat shellfish, I gotta kill you. So I'm doing you a big favor right now. I'm letting it go, you know. So I'd like you to let the homosexual thing go too. Because, you know, if you take one, you have to take it all, right? And I told him, I don't think God's going to send a homosexual to hell. I think we are judged not by our sexual orientation, but the character of our hearts, right? And so if we follow Jesus' teachings, the teachings about love and expansiveness, not calling people out and calling them wicked, etc., etc. Eventually they went away, didn't they? We wore them down, I think. And then he asked me, where in Leviticus does it say about the blend? I said, you're going to have to look it up, friend. It's in there. They didn't know. They didn't know about the blend. I'm not making this stuff up. All right, let's move on, shall we? Let's get back to Jesus. The real Jesus. The joy. Yeah. He said something about light and dark here because he understood the integration of the two. He said, and this is, he's telling it as a parable form, so it's not necessarily to be taken literally, but what does it represent, right? So he says, the lamp of the body is the eye. If your eye is sound, you will have light for your whole body. If your eyes are bad, your whole body will be in darkness. If then the only light you have is darkness, how great a darkness that will be. So if we take it into a symbolic format, and you know, what's it really saying? And your eye is what then? Your, not just your physical, it's your perception, right? If your perception is full of light, if you're willing to look without judgment, right? If your eyes are sound and not always looking for fault in everything, then your whole body will be filled with light. In other words, your life experience will be light, right? But if your eyes are always looking for faults in others, which was the case over there, then you project onto others the darkness within yourself. And this is the thing about judgment, isn't it? The ones that we judge, really, it's all about us. We are judging ourselves in that process. So Jesus is saying, don't do that. Have a holy wholeness about you that is sound, and then your whole body, your whole life experience will be filled. We know this is true, yeah? If you're holding thoughts of negativity, your world becomes a negative place, right? And if then the only light you have is darkness. If you've given up looking from the holistic perspective, all you're looking for is fault, it's a very, very dark place indeed. So, okay, great. How do we do something about this, right? Because that's the whole thing. How do we understand how this works? What can we do about it to do this integration? Because it's no good just talking about it. You've got three parts to you, so do I. We've got our superconscious, which is the spirit. We've got the subconscious, which is all the memories, all the storehouse of the mind. And then you've got the conscious, right? The conscious parts of you. Conscious, subconscious, superconscious. Now, it's like an iceberg. The conscious is the bit above the water. How much percent is that? 3%? 3% of us is conscious. And we tend to think we make conscious decisions about everything. Forget about it. 97% of stuff that's going on is subconscious, under the water. The water is the superconscious spirit, right? So when spirit wants to speak with you, how does spirit usually express? Not in your conscious mind, because we're spending so much time consciously distracted, consciously dealing with everyday reality, right? So when spirit speaks to us, it usually comes through the... Don't throw me off now. Yeah. Like I said, don't throw me off now. It comes through the subconscious mind, right? Now think about it this morning. Since we've been sitting in here, your blood has been circulating. Your breath has been going. Other forces and processes have been happening in your body mind. Have you been aware of them? Probably not. They've all been done automatically, subconsciously. So much else is going on for us, right? So the subconscious is a wonderful place. It's a place of dreams and possibilities. It's also a storehouse for all those sad memories, but it contains wonders as well as terrors, right? And it's all to be integrated, therefore. If you're writing something, you sit down, you've got an empty piece of paper, or you're creating something, you're not really thinking about what you should put on that paper. Usually you're not. You might have some notes, some ideas, but when the ideas begin to flow, they seem to flow from where? Out of the nothing, right? Out of the subconscious. We just know it to be true. It's the intuitive storehouse of all possibility. So, out of the darkness. Out of the darkness into the light. So, darkness, far from being a problem, is actually our most creative resource. Yeah? So, in order for that to be activated, that shadow, as Jung called it, we have to do three things. First of all, acknowledge that it exists. Because there's some of us are walking around thinking only our conscious mind exists, which is sometimes also called the ego, right? The bit that we're aware of. Really, it's the last thing that happens for us, actually, that we're conscious. Most things happen a long time before we become conscious of them, right? They're happening in the subconscious realm. So first of all, acknowledge that we are vaster than we think we are, yeah? Are you okay with that one? Acknowledge it. Acknowledge the dark side. Two, be willing not just to acknowledge it, but to look at it with eyes uncluttered by fear or apprehension, right? Be willing to really look at it. Look inside. Look at those dark places. Look at the sadness. Because unless you can look at it and bring light into it, what? There could be no redemption. There could be no transformation, right? I have to be able to look at it. And the third thing is, look at it without judgment. Because the immediate thing that happens sometimes when we dig around in the dark is that we feel terribly guilty or sad or afraid. Why? I don't wish I wasn't like this. And we push it down again instead of working with it and freeing it. Yesterday, Wendy and I were talking about somebody who's going through some difficult times in our community, right, dealing with a life-threatening illness. And halfway through, it triggered all my memories about my late wife, and I shared for about 10 minutes. I think we just went through the whole last weeks of her life. And I cried, and I went through it all, and then I was through it. But the thing is, I'd done that many times. It wasn't anything new for Wendy, but it was coming up again to be looked at, right? To be acknowledged and to looked at and then released and understood once again. You know, these processes don't just happen one time, right? And then it's done. It's a constant allowing it to filter through so there can be a new understanding of what's going on. Okay with that one? I think it's very, very important. Embracing it again, taking a look at it again. And it's not as sad as it was, you know, because you can look at it again, let it out. And what a gift it is when you got somebody you can share that with, right? So you don't have to do it all by yourself. The next bit is so important, I underlined it. It says, for me, this is so true. Our hurts, fears, selfishness that are stored in the dark, when fearlessly viewed, free us. I think it's even more important than having these wonderful epiphanies where we think that it's all one and I'm one with God and all that. That's nice. But I think when we can honestly own our stuff, however painful, and get an understanding of it, when we free it, that wakes us up and opens us to a degree that we can't even imagine any other way. Yeah. Do you agree? When you've really been honest, self-honesty, it's what's called radical self-acceptance, right? Accepting ourselves just as we are, not trying to fix it. Somebody at 9:30 says, I do all this. Every day I do this. I acknowledge, I'm willing, but then I always judge it. What do I need to do now? I said, well, who is it that's judging? It's usually our ego or our self-protection, our perfectionism, that, you know, I've got to have a mask. I've got to look a certain way. So I'm judging it. I'm pushing it back instead of saying, no, I'm messy. I don't have to hide who I am, right? I'm more than my ego. I'm more than my protection. I am a beautiful, super conscious child of God. And I can let that light of the super conscious shine into even the darkest places. You're going to do it, kid. I know you are. Yeah. Things are going in right now that you won't believe. Let's see, I wasn't going to read that one. I was going to read something else. A lot of it's to do with surrender. And many of us don't understand what surrender is because we think it's passive, right? I surrender, therefore, oh my God, I let go and allow things to happen. I'm not sure I want to. But surrender is not like that. I was talking with Patricia Bassett the other day, and we were talking about surrender. And she said, surrender is an interesting thing because you surrender and then you take action. And then you surrender again, you take action. So it's not like you just surrender and let go. You surrender to the new information, then you act upon it. And it leads you to another moment of letting go, right? So it's an active thing, surrender. It's going deeper with your life. It's taking more chances and willingness to move in a positive direction that then could be done when you're just stuffing these things away. So surrender is powerful in that regard. And I came across this passage from the Four Quartets by T.S. Eliot that I really like because it talks about surrender. He said this, I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. For hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love. For love would be love for the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love and the hope are all in the waiting. Wait without thought, for you are not ready for thought. So the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing. Whisper of running streams and winter lightning, the wild thyme unseen and the wild strawberry, the laughter in the garden, echoed ecstasy, not lost, but requiring, pointing to the agony of death and birth, of Kali and Parvati, of the lightness and the darkness, right, of the yin and the yang in us. And I love that one line. So the darkness shall be the light, right? When you can fearlessly look into the dark, it becomes light. You're enlightened. Let the darkness be the light and the stillness the dancing. Stillness, the willingness to be present to what is. Let me close with a story that's strikingly familiar since we've read those stories early from there. This is the story of Milarepa. Milarepa was the yogi from Tibet, one of the great yogis. He wrote 1,000 songs. He wrote numerous books. But his life started very inauspiciously. His parents were killed when he was very young. And he was so distraught at this that he learned black magic and killed all his uncles that perpetrated the murder and a lot of the other family members. And so as a result of that, he brought on a lot of bad karma. You know, killing people's not a good thing. Well, when he turned 21, he decided, I got to get rid of this bad karma. I shall become a spiritual person. And so he was willing to do almost anything because he didn't want to live with that hanging over him. So he found a master who treated him like a piece of dirt, basically. His master made him build towers, and then as soon as he'd finished, he'd said, tear it down, I want it over here instead. And that went on for several years. He was beaten. He had scars all up his back from carrying the huge rocks. He was bleeding. It was terrible. But his master knew that the only way that he could work through all the negative energy and karma was to be incredibly harsh to him. And Milarepa knew this and took it on until at the age, I don't know, his mid-30s, I think, he became the first glimpses of enlightenment, right? He understood that he'd worked off all that bad stuff with all that terrible treatment that he'd been given, and he decided to go into the caves up in the Himalayas to meditate for the rest of his life. All he ate was nettles, nettle soup, so he became very green. And he'd sit in this cave, the little green man, and hunters that would come would think he was a green ghost, you know, and they'd leave him alone. But in several years, he became a great master, and like I say, wrote a lot of things down. But one thing was always bugging him, and that was demons would come to him after his meditations every day. And he was frightened to heck by these demons, and he thought, "Why, if I'm so spiritual, why do all these demons keep coming at me?" And the more afraid he was, the more they bugged him, right? So contemplating one day, he said, listen, if all is one, if everything's empty, if we're all free and spacious and void, there cannot be any demons. I must be self-creating them. So instead of his usual practice of saying, go away, please, you're bugging me, which didn't work, similar to the story. One morning when the demons came, he said, welcome, friends. And they disappeared right in front of him, never to return. So what had he done? He'd welcomed it home, right? He'd seen the interconnectedness. He saw that they were parts of him. They were friends. They had come there not to curse him and hold him back, but free him. And so the very thing that he thought was the worst block was actually the greatest opening. We could take any of these ideas we've thrown out here this morning and take them into meditation with us to help us. But if there's one thing you're going to take, what would it be? What's the take home here? What are you going to take away? Welcome all sides of you. Don't resist. Okay? Right. Become aware and accept it. Have that radical self-acceptance and then live from that. It's a time for everything. Surrender is active. Even within the darkness, there's light, absolutely, if we're willing to look at it fearlessly. And remember, if you meet a fundamentalist on the road, embrace him. Amen. So once again, in the interest of time, let's just do an arrow meditation straight to the heart of the matter. And acknowledge that we have this wonderful storehouse called the subconscious. It's full of wonders as well as terrors. It's full of tenderness as well as fear. But the more we can fearlessly look, the more it yields its blessings and gifts to us. And so we in this meditation now acknowledge it and are willing to look without judgment, knowing that there are parts of us that are unvisited yet. There's still so much work to do to move beyond that tiny conscious part of ourselves into that realm that is in touch with superconscious, in touch with spirit. So we do not fear the apparent negatives of our lives. We don't rail against those who are different from us. We wisely accept so that love may prevail. So as we go into the silence, let us take that idea with us. We do this so that love may prevail. So whatever is mine to do this week, I do it in such a way so that love may prevail. Thank you, God. So it is.
Thanks for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We sincerely thank you for your contribution, and we affirm with you. Divine love, through me, blesses and multiplies all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive, and I am grateful.